Good morning, Steve McCabe, our technology commentator. How are you?
Good morning, Catherine. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. You want to talk about the dangers of the web. I feel like I need some kind of sinister music behind me.
Well, it's basically a counterpoint to what we talked about last time, because as I'm sure you remember, we were talking last time about how there's a new study out telling us that surfing the web will make us more productive. And to counter that, we've had a British psychologist given a paper in Sydney recently, now saying exactly the opposite. It seems like every time we turn around, it's going the opposite direction. Last week it was good for you, this week it's bad. Apparently the latest thing is that surfing the web is destroying our attention spans.
It's been around for a wee while, that one, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's been around for a wee while, that one, isn't it?
Oh, as I say, this is this week's version. It seems to oscillate backwards and forwards. I'll be on next week telling you how it's wonderful again.
Has the attention span argument got any more weight behind it?
No, not really. It seems to be simply and purely that people are simply going backwards and forwards on this one. It's just fascinating to observe. It's part of this progression that goes probably back to the Romans and the Greeks, that this latest invention, this latest technology is terrible and we're all going to hell in a handbasket, and these new papyrus scrolls that have just come out are going to destroy conversation in the forum, and it's just the latest thing. But it's just fascinating to see that the latest iteration, and it's all across the newspapers now, is that... Now, here's some quotes from her. She's saying that...
Sheila Keegan, a British psychologist.
This is the lady. We spend huge and growing number of hours on the internet, and as a result, our brains are turning to shallow thinking. And, I mean, there is a degree of truth to this, of course. You know, one of the easiest things to do now, if you want to find anything out, you don't remember it anymore, you don't actually think about it, you Google it. And it seems like increasingly we're putting our brains on the internet.
We're kind of a bit skittish, aren't we? We're kind of... constantly got some kind of tablet or computer on, and you know, just randomly sort of go off and start flicking through pages or whatever. But don't we do that as in attention anyway? Don't we have a limited attention span where we naturally take micro breaks? And is this just the new way of doing it?
Well, generally speaking, yes, we do. But if I give you a newspaper, there's a piece of paper with a bunch of text on it. You're going to sit there and read it because it's printed. And if a certain word catches your interest, you can't tap it with your finger and be taken to a whole new page about that. You read in sequence. With hypertext, with clickable links in it, suddenly something else can catch your attention very easily. You click on it, you're taken to a whole new website with a whole new set of information. And it's the ease with which you can allow yourself to be distracted that I think is where we're going with this one.
It's kind of what our brains do anyway, isn't it? You think you're thinking about one thing, the next minute it's wandered off and gone off on some random tangent about something that happened last week or that something that's happened across the road now. And what you're saying is reading is typically kind of the antidote to that, supposed to be the antidote to that tendency of the brain to wander.
Well, exactly. When we're reading printed text, then we're focusing on that one text for an extended period of time. And I think what you're saying is true. There is a degree to which it's a trained skill, that naturally we do tend to be a little bit ADD, a little bit distracted by nature, and that when we're reading, we force ourselves, we discipline ourselves to put the blinkers on and focus on what's in front of us.
What does she mean by shallow thinking? Does she define it?
No, she doesn't, and that's the joy of when you're giving a paper at a conference, you get to say what you think. It's not really peer-reviewed, it doesn't really rely on that many footnotes, but it makes for great soundbite.
I suppose the argument is we don't sit and contemplate.
No.
As much as we might have. I don't know whether people are naturally given to contemplation or not naturally given to contemplation, but the idea of just keeping one primary thought, thinking around it, but sticking with one primary thought for a length of time, do we presume that's being eroded?
That does seem to be the assumption that's being made here, yes. I mean, let's face it, if you're looking at your average, say, inside page in your New Zealand newspaper of choice, you're not going to see one monolithic article that covers the entire page. It is divided into various articles with maybe an advert in the corner. And you are going to be tempted, as you're reading, to suddenly see the colour photograph on the other side of the page, to be distracted by it. So I don't necessarily know that this is news. It's just, what I thought was interesting is the fact that right now, I think the web and the internet are currently being used as a whipping boy for all that's wrong with society.
Yeah. The other thing that I find interesting is the ability to multitask in the mind. And I'm reading about one former Prime Minister who used to sit and do a crossword as he was getting his briefing.
Now, are you reading about that as you're speaking to me?
Hmm?
Are you literally reading about that as you're speaking?
No. I've been reading it in a book. I'm quite old-fashioned.
Oh, Lord.
Given occasionally to contemplation, but I won't tell you where.
Okay.
So anyway, this Prime Minister was tackled, you know, by the person who was advising him, saying, would you mind not doing the crossword? And then proceeded to precis everything he'd just been told. The mind's ability to take and sort information is actually, one would think, evidence of high intelligence and high ability to reason and to advance thinking. Do we presume that the ability to flit on and off a website is any different from sitting doing a crossword because you've become dull with too much information?
Well, again, a very, very fair response. And as I said, you know, we're looking at Dr. Keegan's comments here, and I think she's basically trying to say, you know, modern civilization is crumbling, everything's going to hell, and what's responsible for this time? That'll do quite nicely. It's the internet. So yeah, we are subject to distractions constantly. We are always going to have things pulling at our attention, tugging at the corner of our eye, trying to get our attention, and I think the thing about the internet, in particular, you know, your typical web page, is it's going to be a very, very, very content-rich environment. So like I say, on a newspaper, you do have other articles on the page, but they're on the same page. You say, okay, I'll go to that one next. What you've got typically on a web page, you can have main content, you're going to have oftentimes inline links. So within the text, there's going to be stuff you can click on to take you to other pages. And then often down one side of the page, you're then going to have a row of, interested in this, then you'll like this as well, click here, links. And they're all one line each. So instead of being further developed stuff on the page, it's just, click me, look at me next. And that, I think, is the big difference with a web page.
Interesting. There's a part two to the dangers of the web, and this one is what? The dangers of technology.
Well, this is not so much the web itself, more as the means by which the web is mediated. This is something that's been going on for quite some time now, but it's getting a little bit of attention from a town in West Virginia in the US, a town called Green Bank. The significance of Green Bank is it's almost perfectly a tech-free zone. The reason being, it's at the epicenter of what the Americans call the quiet zone. It's about 33 square kilometers of technology-free land. And the reason they set this up is so they can have an area where there is no wireless communication going on. And one of the things that's taking advantage of this is a radio telescope, the American National Observatory's radio telescope, whose job it is to try and detect radio waves from outer space. And so obviously they don't want aliens, cosmic radio signals, being interfered with by local radio signals saying, where are you? I'm on the train. So they're trying to keep the entire area as human-generated, wireless-free as they possibly can. And people are moving here because there is a growing community in the U.S. that is saying they're suffering from a condition they're calling electromagnetic hypersensitivity syndrome. And the idea behind that is that some people, and depending on who you're talking to, some people are saying as many as 5% of the American population are claiming this, are suffering from a wide range of non-specific symptoms of non-specific severity, allegedly induced by the presence of either electromagnetic fields or electromagnetic waves.
Well, we don't know a hell of a lot about the mass use of these things so far, do we?
No, we don't. We absolutely don't. World Health Organization basically say there's no clear diagnostic criteria, there's no specific basis to link EHS to exposure to EMFs, there's no definite link. There's been one study that I know of so far, has been doing a bit of research on this, there's been one woman, a doctor incidentally, so you could give us some plausibility here, but she's saying that she gets a range of symptoms. She's talking about muscle pain, nausea, headaches, that kind of thing, when she's exposed to electromagnetic waves. And the kind of thing she's talking about, cell phones, Wi-Fi routers, you know, even, say, cordless keyboard and cordless mouse on your computer, that kind of technology, she's saying the waves that they give out are making her sick. And so as a result, She's saying that she wants to move to a place like the quiet zone where she's suddenly not exposed to this kind of thing any longer.
I think it was also one of the many theories on what might be happening to the bees, that we might be mucking with their little kind of navigational
That has
systems.
Been mooted as well, yes. There does seem to be growing anecdotal evidence that bees whose hives are located close to cell phone towers are being compromised. So it's one of those things where, on the one hand, the physics teacher in me wants to dismiss these people as cranks. On the other hand, I'm thinking, you know what, there actually could be something in this.
Well, we don't know what we don't know.
Well, that's very, very true. And rigorous scientists, when they hear that kind of phrase, they say, well, if we don't know that we don't know it, then we don't know it.
No, but why don't we try and find out, is my point.
Exactly. And then, but then there has to, that we're reaching the point now where people are starting to raise some rather interesting questions.
Like?
Well, is there, in fact, a danger from these waves that we don't know about yet? A few months ago, a new report came out about cell phone use. And cell phones, for the longest time, I've heard them described as using them as like drinking from a lead goblet. You know, they're a great thing, but they're doing little by little, drip by drip, damage to your brains. You know, it's basically it's microwave technology that you're holding right against your brain, and that can't be an entirely good thing. But they've recently, by some international bodies, been ranked as being about as potentially carcinogenic as coffee.
That was my point I was going to make when that list came out, and they were listed next to lead and all these things, and then sitting there, hello, waving at me, was coffee.
Yes,
guess what I pour down my gullet every morning.
But basically, there's I think, as I remember correctly, there's three categories in that list. At the one end, you've got, say, nicotine, and you've got asbestos, as it'll give you cancer as soon as you look at it. Mm. At the other end, you've got water and air, and those are the two extremes. And everything else gets lumped in the middle as being, could be.
I'm very worried about the bees. I'd be very interested in them doing some more work on that, whoever them is.
Well,
underfunded researchers, no doubt.
I shall keep an eye on my beehive at home and let you know.
Thank you. Oh, you've got one of those urban beehives. We must not digress another time.
Absolutely.
Domain names. I thought we were running out, or was it something else we were running out of?
Well, what we're running out of is IP addresses. Now, the point about domain names is that domain names are intended to make us humans not have to worry about IP addresses. IP addresses are all those the numerical addresses that each computer connected to the internet has. Domain names are a way that instead of telling you that my web address is 184.187.whatever it might be, I can just tell you it's stevemccabe.net. And domain names are a way of giving human-friendly addresses. And historically, they've all been based on what they call top-level domains. .com, .net, .org, for example, were the main ones originally. We've then got the country-specific ones like .nz for New Zealand, .uk for Great Britain, for example. And there's a couple of interesting developments that have just come up recently. There's going to be a whole slew of new top-level domains coming out. Like I say, originally top-level domains were going to be .com, .edu, .mil. They're all US-specific. So then eventually a few new ones came out, .biz, .mobi for mobile devices, for example. Never really quite caught on. Never really got traction. Country-specific ones got to be really big, especially places like countries like Tuvalu, whose top-level domain is .tv, have obviously made a decent amount of money out of selling rights to their domains. So anybody who wants to have a .tv domain. Now, what's going to come out next, and this is going to be coming out very, very shortly, two things are going on. First of all, anybody with the money, I want to say money, I'm talking around a couple of $100,000, can register their own top-level domain. So you could have, instead of being, say, Ryan.com, which is probably already taken, you could simply get .ryan. And so your website could be Catherine.ryan.
Not much on it, I have to say.
But the potential is there. If you are, say, a Google or a Microsoft or an Apple, you know that that's going to be something that you're going to want to have. So, for example,
so that puts a value on it straight away.
Oh, absolutely. Commercially, yes. Mm. I mean, individual users like, say, you or me, we're not going to bother with this. We haven't got the $5,000 they're asking just to get the application started. But you know that Google are going to want to go away from, say, Google.com. They want to become search.google. And you know they're going to do it. But what's also coming up is also of there's probably less of interest in New Zealand, Radio New Zealand listeners probably wouldn't have any part in this, but there's going to be a whole new top-level domain, .xxx.
This is the porn sites.
This is going to be the porn domain, yes. And the idea is that if you see a .xxx domain, you know that's going to be adult-oriented. Now, that's going to be really useful for corporations who want to do blocking of that kind of site in businesses. You know, schools, for example, can very, very easily filter out any address that ends in .xxx. It's porn. It's not coming into our internal network. It makes filtering great. Really convenient. But This has just been announced very recently. This, I think it's this week that those domains are going to go on sale. But before they go on sale to the public, and I think this is a really, really good idea, people are going to be offered the opportunity to block domains that might be associated with them. So that, for example, if this measure weren't put in place, I could, if I felt so moved, register and set up the site katherineryan.xxx. And that would purportedly be a porn site about Katherine Ryan. So what's being offered now is that you can now go and say, I want that. I want the rights to that site. I want to own that site. And you can then take it, stick it in a box somewhere, and never use it, or possibly use it if you wish to. But the point is, what you could do is prevent me from ever using it.
How much would it cost to go and do the blocking thing?
A couple hundred dollars.
There you go.
And that's going to be, rather than the way these domains work at the moment, where you pay and renew every year, apparently that's going to be a forever thing.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, who knows?
I think it's quite a good idea, personally.
We're supposed to have seven careers in our lifetimes, aren't we?
We just found your next. Excellent.
I don't know how many subscribers there'd be. Acne, just segging very clumsily. Someone has come up with an app for acne. Are we now moving from the infomercials to the app commercials when it comes to silly things we'll buy?
Oh, this is priceless, isn't it? I mean, you say silly things. I mean, this has got to be one of the silliest I've heard about recently. You know, Apple, when they've been touting the iPhone, one of the advertising slogans they've been using is, there's an app for that. And someone decided that they would write an app that would cure acne. And when I first read the article that had the information about this, I was just blown away by how gullible some people are. Apparently, for $2 a pop, you can buy an app that will basically turn your iPhone screen a particular color. Now, light therapy for acne apparently is fairly well established, but it's done with pretty high-powered lighting under very controlled circumstances by people who know what they're doing. You can't simply hold your phone screen to your face and expect it to clear up your zits. But apparently,
yes.
I mean, you and I can see the sensibility of that.
Yes.
Well over 11,500 people didn't.
So 11,500 people have paid how much for this?
A couple of dollars each.
Wow.
Yeah, we're in the wrong job, Catherine.
We are. Oh, now I've got two choices.
Well, first of all, I mean, it's great, isn't it? First of all, you use the iPhone app to clear up your acne, and then you set up the website. The progression is absolutely brilliant.
Who's buying them? Do we know? It's the iPhone users, you said.
Well, like I say, there's about 11,000 iPhone users, and before all non-iPhone users start getting really smug about this and saying, oh, those Apple users are all stupid, it's also worth noting that this guy's not the only person to have done it. Another fella's set up a program called Acne Power that's on sale for the Google Android phones. 3,500 people have paid a dollar each for that one as well.
Oh, Lord.
And
a set of steak knives attached, no doubt.
More than likely, yes.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Steve McCabe, our technology commentator.